Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grootnibblink. I'm the creator of Apples and Genos, originator of the Zero-G Draft Strategy. And in this podcast, I'm going to go over the most puzzling players league-wide as submitted by the Apples and Genos Discord server. Let's get it. All right, welcome in, everybody. We got Josh in the chat saying he sat Eichel tonight. Hope he doesn't regret it. I haven't checked, actually. We got scores. We got a 2-2 game right now, Vegas and Columbus. No points for Eichel so far. So far, so good, I guess, in that regard, but definitely a bit of a bold move. Looks like he hasn't been exactly leading the team in ice time so far. It would make sense if they kind of let him ease back into things a little bit. We got TD in here with the hashtag #0G. Good to see you, buddy. All right, I'm going to jump right in with actually a little bit of news because I do think some of this is pretty important. We've got Dylan Larkin out a couple of weeks from the game the other day. That is really going to hurt Detroit, in my opinion. I wonder if they consolidate the top power play now. Up to this point, Larkin had been on a power play unit with Perron, Compher, and Raymond. And then Kane and DeBrincat had been on another power play unit with Fabry and Sprong. I wonder if they consolidate things a little bit more now. Maybe it's like a Kane, DeBrincat, Raymond, Compher situation. I don't know exactly what that would be, but something along those lines. Definitely a hit overall to everyone in Detroit, right? Dylan Larkin, definitely the straw that stirs the drink there. Obviously, we've got Eichel back, which is a big one. Should be big ups for everybody, including Vegas goalies. Shea Theodore came back with a whole bunch of assists in his first few games, but that should be good for him as well. And then Lindy Ruff being fired in New Jersey. It's going to be an interesting one. New Jersey had always had pretty solid underlying metrics for the vast majority of the season. Even lately, pretty strong, like fifth in the league in 5v5 Corsi 4 per 60. If you just look at the Corsi 4 percentage at 5v5, they're fifth there as well. If you go to scoring chance 4 percentage at 5v5, it's a little bit further down at 11th, but still good numbers overall. So from that perspective, you don't think that Lindy Ruff was doing anything too terrible for them, but obviously the results have not been there for the Devils, and they were looking for some big results this year. So not totally unexpected, but definitely probably a case where some goaltending sunk Lindy Ruff a little bit. Overall, I'll be interested to see, obviously, whenever there's a coaching shakeup, instantly you want to know how are they going to deploy things differently. What could the new coaching staff do differently than what was already in place? I can't imagine that this is helpful for Jack Hughes overall, because Lindy Ruff played Jack Hughes a ton. So that would be an interesting one if they kind of manage those minutes a little bit more. Overall, I don't expect a ton, but we could see a bump for Timo Meier, which would be the most interesting thing that could come out of this. And that's definitely something we'll get into, as Timo Meier is on this list as well. We got Adwan saying, "Hey, yo, not sure if you made it on the Discord list, but talk Malkin, please." We can definitely talk some Evgeny Malkin. We could start there. I'm okay to do that. Let's start with some Evgeny Malkin. For some reason, it's not populating in my sheet, though, which is a problem. Let me switch over, see if I can get this to work for me. Evgeny Malkin, there we go. 3 points his last five, averaging 18 minutes a game. The underlying metrics have not been kind to Evgeny Malkin as of late, and they have still been running this weird two power play system that's really not been working at any point. But Malkin on a unit away from Crosby and Raquel, Not a huge fan of how that looks overall. And yeah, at even strength, like Malkin's line had the third most even strength minutes in the game against the Oilers. It was a weird game. Obviously, the Oilers kind of blew them out, so maybe you don't want to read too much into the time distribution, time on ice distribution in a blowout game like that. But overall, not good things for Evgeny Malkin, right? 285th in shots per 60, 165th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 198 in Corsi, 4 per 60, 106 in scoring chances, 4 per 60. On the season, pacing for just 24 goals, 64 points. Not what you have come to expect from Evgeny Malkin. I do think that he's being hurt a lot by the fact that they really don't have a lot of depth on their wingers. And that's being tested, obviously, with Rust and Guentzel both out. So definitely something to monitor there. I've talked about Malkin a few times. I am concerned just because it does seem like they're not that keen on making him a focal part of the offense anymore. I honestly would disagree with that, especially insofar as it pertains to the power play, just because, like, all due respect to Lars Eller and Valtteri Puustinen, but Evgeny Malkin is still a better offensive hockey player than either of those two players. So, it is what it is. The power play hasn't worked all year, which is obviously why they're trying these things. I understand, like, why they're doing it, but this is not working either. At some point, you got to put your best players out there, give them every opportunity to succeed, and then see what comes out. But overall, yeah, I can't be excited about Malkin. This 64-point pace feels roughly accurate. Like, there could even be a floor below this. So, not super excited about Malkin moving forward. Matt says, I know you'll probably touch on these two players tonight, but between Harley and Faber, who would be the drop in your opinion for rest of season? So I do have Faber in here. I've talked on Faber along with Blake in a few podcasts recently. He's got just one assist his last five games, and really the cold streak does go back a little bit further than that. Even when the Wild were truly on fire and they were just fill in the nets. This one assist in the last five games, it's actually one assist in the last 10 games. That's his only point in the last 10 games, despite still maintaining a tremendous amount of ice time, 24 and a half average time on ice over the last five games. The underlying metrics are terrible. He's not shooting. He went five straight games without a shot before getting four shots in this last game against San Jose, which is obviously not as tough an opponent. The underlying metrics, just look terrible for Brock Faber. 175th in shots per 60, 174th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 for a defenseman. That is not where you want to be if you're looking for offense. I have said it before, and I do kind of feel that Brock Faber has hit a wall here a little bit. And Thomas Harley, in contrast, has not hit a wall. He continues to put up really good underlying metrics. Yes, he doesn't have top power play, and so you might expect that that would be a problem. But I also think that Thomas Harley's situation is far better than Brock Faber's situation, even though Faber is getting more minutes. I just think that every time Harley's on the ice, the Dallas Stars have, a top nine that can score with anybody in the league. And so it doesn't really matter when Harley's on the ice, he's got a chance to cash in on some points. I would take Harley over Faber rest of season. Tyler asks, have you mentioned Meyer? Is he worth an ad with the coaching change? Meyer is on the way. He is definitely on the list for tonight. We will get there, but first I want to talk about the top two on the list, Arturi Lehkonen, Valeri Nichushkin. I have talked about these two as well. It's been a popular topic about, when Nichushkin comes back. It looks like the common prevailing knowledge, I guess, at this point is that Nichushkin would probably be back on Wednesday, at this point, maybe Friday. Between those two games, either way, it looks like Nichushkin is going to be back in the lineup this week for the Colorado Avalanche. What does that do to Arturi Lehkonen, who has been enjoying some run with the top guys there in Colorado, top line, top power play? And that's been a spot that Nichushkin obviously held for a good chunk of the season before. So Overall, I don't have any terrific insight. I have mentioned this before, but the only thing consistent with how Jared Bednar has deployed the top six is that it's been very inconsistent. He definitely likes to move things around whenever things aren't going particularly well. And so if there's a stretch where the Avalanche don't score, then they'll move things around. And, they've split up Rantanen and McKinnon at times. They've moved Lehkonen for Nichushkin and then moved Nichushkin back for Lehkonen. They've done all sorts of different things. They have Jonathan Drouin in the mix now, who they've liked to use both on the top power play and on the top line at different times throughout the season. So I just think there's a lot of different ways that this could go. And the most likely scenario is that both Lehkonen and Nichushkin cannibalize each other just a little bit, where neither of them for the rest of the season gets the absolute nuts deployment where they're obviously top line and top power play. Obviously, only one can be on the top line along with both McKinnon and Rantanen. I just think they both probably get looks on the power play rest of, or on the top line rather rest of season, and so they kind of do just cannibalize each other in that way where when one's not going, the other one will get a run, 3, 4, 5 games, and then it'll switch back. And it'll really just depend who you have, when you absolutely need it, when it's in the playoffs. I know that's not the answer that anyone wants to hear, that it could be variable and you could be left with a guy who's not the most valuable in that time frame, but I think it is the most likely scenario in my mind. I would not, just read into the very first lines coming out when Nichushkin does get back into the lineup and say, this is the way that it's going to be for the rest of the season. This is exactly what they want to do. I don't think it's that simple with Colorado. They will move things around from here before the end of the fantasy season. All right, we have Dirty Deed 5. Nate Dogg, if you had to keep two and drop one, who would it be between Scary Terry, Raquel, insert Blake's voice, and the Pinto Bean? That's an interesting one. Keep two, drop one. You have Troy Terry, Ricard Raquel, and Shane Pinto. I think you have to hang on to Ricard Raquel. All the talk today was that Jake Guentzel is very likely to be moved from the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, it makes some sense, I guess. If they're not going to re-sign him, then you may as well trade him in this contract year and get what you can for him. If that is true, then Ricard Raquel is absolutely just going to live on Crosby's line on the top power play, top line for the rest of the season, and he's going to be pretty valuable. So I do think that that is somebody that I want to be hanging on to. I have to hang on to Troy Terry, I think. I mean, we just got news today that McTavish's injury is a bit long term as well, and so you're rapidly losing teammates for Troy Terry, players that he can bounce pucks off of and into the net. So there is that concern for sure with Troy Terry. That might be enough, but it's also hard to. I talked about this. Shane Pinto has had a terrific stretch, absolutely awesome. I'm very excited about what this means for his long term prospects. I am less certain that he's going to just absolutely keep this pace up for the rest of the season. I think he's on a 74-point pace at the moment. We mentioned yesterday in the podcast, Blake and I talked about him. So that's a little bit it's a little bit harder to project. And I think, this time of year, I just don't want a guy who kind of goes to nothing. I don't think that Pinto will go to nothing, but I think there's a better chance that he goes to nothing than Troy Terry goes to nothing. And so if I had to keep two between all three of those guys, I would keep Troy Terry and Ricard Raquel. Lake Effect says Boldy versus Batherson, rest of season points league. Your thoughts, please. I am going to take Boldy there. I just think that Boldy is honestly a more talented player. His metrics are better. Batherson will probably get some good run. He's been playing well lately. I just think that Boldy is the more talented player in a points league. I'm going to bet on the talent there. Random Reviews is here, aka Drewski. Good to see you. Last one's good evening, Goat. Almost missed the show. Phew. Oh. Good to see you. Good to see that you made it in. Not a schedule grab for the week, but should I snag Granlund? I have two streamer spots at the moment, so one will be gone. Mikael Granlund, we can look at his numbers here for sure, throw him in and see where he's been. I've been very kind of tepid on Mikael Granlund, and this is why: 259th in shots per 60, 240th individual scoring chances for per 60, 282 Corsi 4 per 60, 232 scoring chances for per 60. That being said, he's skating over 23 minutes a night, and he's got 5 points in his last five games on the season, pacing out for a 14 goal, 63 point pace. Yeah, it's a little bit hard to argue with the production. Obviously, he's been solid, obviously not spectacular, skating those crazy minutes. Overall, I'm not excited about Granlund. Yes, you can stream him if it fits with your lineup, if you got open spots on the nights that they're playing. I can't remember off the top of my head what San Jose's schedule is this week. I'd have to find that back for a moment. Yeah, they're playing on all heavy nights, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday this week. So that's not really helping you. If you can fit them in for all three nights and there's nobody else out there who you're fitting in for more, then sure, Mikael Granlund might end up being the best guy available. I do think that, you know, he can keep up this 63-point pace. That feels okay. It's a 71% IPP. I don't think that's too crazy. 8.6% shooting percentage. That's probably, honestly, where it's going to live. 11.1% on-ice shooting percentage might be a touch high. But overall, like a 60-point player and Mikael Granlund rest of season, he's going to skate this crazy amount of minutes. I don't think that that's too crazy. All right, let's switch back over and get back into these. So we touched on Brock Faber already. So let's talk Pyotr Kochetkov. Obviously, the talk is with Frederik Andersen coming back. Another one that I've mentioned in passing before, but I'm unconvinced that Frederik Andersen is actually a goaltender that we should be have any level of concern about for fantasy. He has not been good the last few seasons. He's been injured, obviously. The issue that he's coming back from is just a blood clotting issue, so it's not really an injury per se in the way that we think of injuries for hockey purposes. It's definitely a little different, but I just don't know if Frederik Andersen is a goaltender that we need to be like worried about for fantasy purposes. That being said, I do think the most likely scenario here is that they split the net once again, Kochetkov and Andersen. I would project Kochetkov as the 1A at this point, that he would get the majority of the starts, just because I have no confidence in Andersen even being really any good when he does play. But Kochetkov has had some interesting moments as well as of late. So if Andersen does come out hot, then you could see a scenario where Kochetkov goes to nothing. It really depends. Like, there are other goaltenders out there. Like, I would probably take Philip Grubauer over Pyotr Kochetkov at this point. I guess we can use that to segue in over to the Seattle net mining situation. Joey Decord versus Philip Grubauer. Grubauer is getting the start tonight. I'm just going to double check this, but this makes for, what is this? I think it was the February 24th game against Minnesota where Decord allowed those, what was it, four goals, I think, early on, and then it was just passed over to Grubauer. So yeah, Grubauer came into that game, and then this will be Grubauer's fourth straight start since. So honestly, if you still have Joey Decord on your roster, you're absolutely sleeping at the wheel right now. You need to drop Joey Decord and get him out of there. It's Phil Grubauer's net right now. There's no two ways about it. I don't see a scenario like... No team gives a goaltender four starts and then just goes back and gives the other guy four starts in a row. That just, like, maybe 1% of the time that happens when there's a four-start run, that they just flip the switch and go to a four-start run for the other guy. I just don't see a scenario in which that's going to happen. Grubauer's been playing great. They don't really have a reason to go back to Decord at the moment, at least in any kind of meaningful capacity for fantasy purposes. And Seattle's not such a great situation that you absolutely have to have whoever's playing in net for that team. So overall, Grubauer is the goaltender to roster. Decord should be dropped everywhere, in my opinion. Going back up to get Zach Werenski here. He's got three assists his last five games. I believe I saw that he had picked up an assist in this game that's ongoing versus Vegas. Yes, he did. He picked up a first period assist there. So that's obviously good for us Werenski rosterers. 24 minutes a night, still doing pretty solid stuff. 42nd in shots per 60. He's done better than that in his career, but considering the state of Columbus, that's not terrible. 26th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. 27th in Corsi, 4 per 60. And 14th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. Those are really impressive numbers, honestly. Skating 24 minutes a night on this Columbus team, having those kind of underlying numbers, on-ice numbers, really just shows that Zach Werenski can push the play. And his season-long numbers are even better. On pace for 7 goals only, which is just a shooting percentage outlier in my opinion, but 61 points, like, Werenski has been terrific, and I don't think he's getting the recognition that he deserves. And honestly, I'll be happy to take the discount on him once again in my drafts next year if he doesn't get the recognition that he deserves. And hopefully Columbus breaks out next year and Werenski can have like a monster season. Maybe he'll go off for one of these Eric Karlsson-esque like point per game season or something. Maybe we'll get one of those out of Zach Werenski one of these years. I do think Werenski is a borderline elite level offensive talent from the blue line in the National Hockey League. It's really just been the situation that's held him down so far. So yeah, I'm hanging on to Werenski. I think he's terrific. I would not be even thinking about doing anything with Zach Werenski if I've got him on my roster. All right, we've got some questions in here. E. Dangler says, should I hold Thomas Harley? He's cooled off. I'm holding Thomas Harley where I have him. I mean, unless you're in like an 8-team league where there's really good defenseman options on the wire, there's just no way, in my opinion, that there's anybody out there that's better than Thomas Harley. So I'm hanging on to Harley. The underlying metrics have not really cooled off. It's still going strong there. He's skating tons of minutes. Obviously not top power play with Miro Heiskanen in there, but still good enough that I can't imagine that there's somebody better to pick up for your defense. Runner reviews, what to do with Ingram? I'm leaning dropping after this week. I've already dropped Ingram in some spots. Vejmelka has gotten a bit of run here. I was going to check actually how many. Vejmelka and Ingram were both requested. So yeah, Vejmelka has gotten the last 2 starts. We'll see who gets the start against Chicago here on Tuesday. And that'll obviously be interesting. I mean, the most likely scenario is still that both Ingram and Vejmelka get 2 starts apiece in this 4-game week for Arizona here. So you could hang on hoping that Ingram gets this Tuesday versus Chicago and can have a nice game and then move on from there. But I think there's a pretty strong possibility that they go to Vejmelka for this Tuesday game. He's played very strong games the last 2 games, and it wouldn't surprise me if they just give him another run here. So that could work as well. Jordan Wong, hey Nate, 2 questions. Number 1, would you take Harley over Shabbat or Ghost rest of season? I would take Harley over Gostisbehere, I think. Probably not over Shabbat, but it is very close. Probably I would go Shabbat, then Harley, then Ghost at the moment. Very close between the 3, all 3, quite honestly, though. I could see it going either way. I don't think that it's like a massive swing either way between any of those 3 players. Number 2, would you drop any of Jarvis, Jenner, or Lekkonen to pick up Raquel? And then gives the scoring settings there. Pretty standard stuff overall. That's an interesting one. I'd like to take a second and just compare and contrast those names. Seth Jarvis being 1, Boone Jenner, and then Arturi Lekkonen, who I had up there earlier. I can never remember how to spell his name, if it's 2 T's or 2 R's. It's a problem for this sheet. There we go. We got it. And then Ricard Raquel. So Raquel, as I mentioned, getting lots of deployment. Really, all these guys have been getting really solid deployment. Jarvis has been taking a hit in terms of the underlying stats, especially the individual underlying stats as of late. Interesting stuff for sure. I could see it a few different ways. Like, overall, I think that Seth Jarvis is probably Seth Jarvis and Boo Jenner have the most I don't know, Raquel feels pretty locked into me, as I mentioned too, in terms of, I was gonna say, just in terms of the role for the rest of the season. Like Lekkonen, as I mentioned, with Nichushkin there, could get bounced around a little bit and have some weeks where he's on the top line and you're loving life, and have some weeks where he's not on the top line and you're like, should I be dropping this guy? The other 3 between Jarvis, Jenner, and Raquel, I feel like have pretty solid roles rest of season, like pretty locked in. So that's a little bit more exciting to me, I guess. Maybe I would take Raquel over Lekkonen rest of season. That might be the one for me. Anthony says, thank you for your DeBrusque recommendation. That's probably bad news for my Toronto Maple Leafs. It's now 3-0. What do we got here? Yeah, we got a DeBrusque goal and a DeBrusque assist. I picked up DeBrusque in a spot as well, so I guess that's good for my team there. But yeah, not great for my Toronto Maple Leafs, that's for sure. All right, let's keep rolling. Let's go talk about Timo Meier. This is going to be a hot topic for a lot of people with the Lindy Ruff firing for sure. And Timo Meier has really turned it on as of late, and we got to give this guy his props. He's got 3 goals, 6 points in his last 5. And really, this has been the start of things starting to, or at least feeling like it's turning around for him as of late. Average time on ice, 17, yeah, like about 17 and a quarter minutes per game. The last few games, it's really started to come up. The last 3 games, I guess you could say. He's also got 1 game over 19 minutes there, which is really nice. He had a 9-shot game there against Anaheim. Has started hitting again. Those things are all good. You see the underlying numbers here, 12th in shots per 60, 13th individual scoring chances for per 60, 18th Corsi for per 60, 19th scoring chances for per 60. All of that terrific stuff. He's been playing on the line with Heischer and Bratt, which is a good line. There's no two ways about it. Like, I guess in a perfect world, you'd like him to play with Jack Hughes because Jack Hughes is obviously the best offensive player there. But Meier playing with Heischer and Bratt at even strength, I'm not mad about that. I think Bratt is a terrific offensive talent, and Heischer is kind of like that, maybe a touchdown from John Tavares in his prime, but something in that mold where he's just like a good, hardworking guy who's going to factor in on a bunch of points here and definitely not hinder his line mates from reaching their potential. The one thing, obviously, with Meier is that right now he's on the outside looking in when it comes to the top power play unit. You got Toffoli, Heischer, Bratt, Hughes as the forwards on the top power play unit, which really does limit his ceiling. And that's going to be the part that I'm going to really want to see before I just sign off on Timo Meier being a rest of season like bonanza for fantasy purposes. Realistically, this is probably more just he had some positive regression coming. Like, he's still only shooting 9.7% on the season with a 9.4% on ice shooting percentage. Both of those numbers should come up. He's pacing for 22 goals, 48 points. Where would I place Meier rest of season as a point pace? I think he can probably, even without top power play deployment, I think he can probably approach a 30 goal, 60 point pace. I know that's not what people want. In terms of where they probably drafted Timo Meier this year, but I think that's the most likely scenario rest of season if he is truly back and he's going to shoot the way that we know he can shoot and, yeah, continue to put pucks on net and be a force the way he has been in the past in San Jose. So hopefully this is a true sign of things to come for Timo Meier, not just a blip in the overall season. I'm optimistic just because we have seen it, obviously, from Timo Meier in past seasons where he has been this guy, where he has sustained a full season of being among the league leaders in these rate stats that we like to look at. So I'm optimistic from that perspective, but I do think you have to expect a bit of a cap on the ceiling unless there's some sort of injury to the top power play guys there. The one thing, obviously, that does potentially change up all of this is the new coaching situation with Lindy Ruff getting fired. So if, for whatever reason, the new coach is a fan of Timo Meier, not so big a fan of Tyler Toffoli, say, then Timo Meier all of a sudden could be playing with Jack Hughes, could be on the top power play, could be playing 20-plus minutes a night, and he could absolutely go off. That's definitely within the range of outcomes here, so I wouldn't want to discount that. As far as what you're doing with Timo Meier, I mean, if you got him on your team, you're definitely not dropping him. If he's out there on your waiver wire, it's probably worth adding him. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine he's out on many waiver wires with this recent stretch. Maybe in, yeah, some of these like 8-team, maybe a 10-team league somewhere, he's still out there. Definitely, I think Meier should be rostered at the moment, given the hot stretch and the uncertainty with the new coach, where there is a ceiling here with this player that is truly exciting, which is something that we really can't say for a lot of these players, quite honestly. But Timo Meier, we've seen it before. There is a ceiling here where he absolutely is a fantasy difference maker. All right, next up, Gabriel Landeskog. This is basically just saying, is Gabriel Landeskog a true stash rest of season? I don't think so, personally. I'd be surprised if Landeskog did come back before the end of the season. I haven't actually looked into the cap situation for the Avalanche. That could be telling if they have a bunch of room kind of allotted for Landeskog and they don't use it at the trade deadline, then maybe that does kind of hold out some hope that he could make it back before the end of the regular season. I think the most likely scenario is still that he does not and that he's basically a nothing. Doesn't do anything for your fantasy rosters this season. I think that's the most likely scenario. But I mean, if you get to the end of your week and there's really nothing left to, nobody left to pick up, your matchup is not in doubt, and you want to just throw that dart and have the guy on your IR just in case. I mean, you could do worse things with an ad at the end of the week in that case. All right, Logan Stankoven, 3 goals, 4 points, his last five, averaging a touch under 15 minutes a night, 23rd in shots per 60, 47th individual scoring chances four per 60, 40th in Corsi four per 60, 11th in scoring chances four per 60. Logan Stankoven is a legitimate top prospect, so this is not super surprising. I mean, it is somewhat surprising when any rookie comes in and just absolutely lights things up as soon as he arrives, but I mean, the guy has 57 points in 47 games in the AHL this year. He has 100 point seasons in the WHL. Just a true stud of a prospect for sure. I think he's been discounted definitely at times because he's only 5'8", but he's shown the ability at multiple levels now. Everywhere he's gone, he's put up points, including the NHL now. I do think Stankoven is the real deal, but it is still the Dallas Stars, and he is still unlikely to see, top power play or anything more really than like 15, maybe 16 minutes a game. And so I don't think that Stankoven is a guy who's likely to be super fantasy relevant. Definitely well within streamer range, but probably not much more than that looking forward. Tyson Forster, similar story, obviously, in terms of a rookie player who's just absolutely going off at the moment. 6 goals, 7 points his last five games. Did talk about this player with Blake in the flagship show. So if you haven't listened to that one, you can definitely go check out both of our thoughts there. Overall, what I'm doing with Forster is what I'm doing with pretty much every Philadelphia Flyer. I'm content to roster him while Torts still loves him, while he's getting this 19 plus minutes a night, and while he's hot. I just think that there's probably an expiration date on this player, and Torts will he'll miss a back check somewhere or something, and Torts will light him up, and he'll get sat for the next 6 games because that's what Torts does. So that's my opinion of Tyson Forster. All right. Let's go through and talk about some of these questions that were coming in the chat. Edangler had mentioned Harley has six defensemen with only five spots. Have to drop one. Who would it be? The defensemen are McAvoy, Shabbat, Harley, Sider, EK65, and Montour. That is quite the lineup. I would love to have that problem for sure. Of those players, it could be Harley. I mean, it does definitely depend on your settings. You do say it's a points league. If it's a points only league, then Sider would be the drop for me. If there's a decent bangers weight, then Sider definitely moves up. It's probably between, in a more standard points league, it's probably between Sider and Harley for me. It would probably just depend on the bangers weight. If there's a pretty solid bangers weight, then I'd keep Sider. If there is not, then I would keep Harley over Sider personally. Anthony asks, thoughts on Mason Marchman's cold spell? Is he a drop? Probably. I've never really viewed Mason Marchment as more than a streamer option throughout this season. He's obviously had a good season. He's got 0 points his last five, averaging just over 15 minutes a night. The underlying stats are terrible right now. Marchment does seem to do this where he goes hot. He gets like way up there in terms of the underlying stats that we like. And then he'll go absolutely ice cold as well. So I'm not convinced that Marchment is really anything more than a streamer in most leagues. Like even in a 14 team league, I don't think you have to be hanging on to a guy like Mason Marchment. He's been playing in the most recent game on a line with Ty Dellandrea and Matt Duchene, which is just okay, not great. Obviously, second power play usage there as well for Marchment. Yeah, I think you can drop Mason Marchment in almost every scenario, and you're not going to be too sad about it. All right, let's keep rolling with the players that we have here. So, wanted to touch on the Wild goaltending situation. Obviously, Filip Gustavsson is getting the run here. So, he's definitely the guy who's getting the starts. At the moment, he's basically been playing two starts to every one for Marc-Andre Fleury. And I don't think that's likely to change overall. The question also asked a little bit about just the Wild in terms of a defensive situation. And the Wild are very average, I would say, in terms of 5v5 defense versus offense. I just think they're very kind of run-of-the-mill, probably a touch below playoff level. So I don't think it's a negative situation necessarily, but it's definitely also not a positive situation as it has been in the past. And one of the reasons why Gustavsson had such a great season was definitely because of the Wild playing really good defense. So I am pretty ambivalent on Gustavsson. I think he's going to get two out of every three starts on average, maybe 60-40, maybe not a full two out of every three, but maybe a 60-40 start share rest of the way. I think he's rosterable for sure. I don't think that he's gonna flip the switch and go back to where he was and what was it, a year ago now, where he was just absolutely lighting things on fire and having a terrific season. So I don't think that's in the cards for Filip Gustavsson, but I do think that he can be a useful piece for fantasy purposes. We already talked about Vejmelka and Ingram. In that situation, I do think Ingram is probably droppable at this point. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up taking the net back from Vejmelka, but Vejmelka's had a couple of good starts, and there's a pretty solid chance that he gets the next start. If Vejmelka gets the Tuesday start, then you're most likely looking at only one start for Ingram this week, and that's not something I'm interested in. I've already dropped Ingram in at least one spot, and I know some other managers that I really respect have done the same. Let's talk Evan Rodriguez here. Goal and an assist for 2 points his last five, skating just over 14 minutes a night, but the underlying number is pretty strong. 10th in shots per 60, 35th individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 66th Corsi 4 per 60, and 128th in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. The problem that I have with Evan Rodriguez is that it does seem like the Florida Panthers have settled their lines a bit, and with that settling, Rodriguez is squarely on the third line with Eetu Laasarainen and Anton Lundell. And that's just not a place where you're going to be able to put up a lot of points. Like, I don't see him getting much more than 14 minutes a night. I don't see, like, even if he is shooting as well as he's shooting right now, I just don't think there's enough time on ice and enough strong play around him in terms of the line mates there that you can really count on Rodriguez for any kind of offensive production. You know, if he gets back on the Barkov line, sure, immediately I'm in. I'm absolutely in at that point. I'd pick him up and roll with him. But in this current situation, I don't think Evan Rodriguez is somebody that you got to be hanging on to. Big chillin', what's up with Zib? So yeah, Mika Zibanejad, another one that Blake and I did talk about. Zibanejad has been concerning to me pretty much all year. Just one goal his last five, skating almost 23 minutes a night, but the underlying numbers you can see here, 257 shots per 60, 320th individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. On-ice numbers a little bit better, being probably buoyed a little bit by the Panarin-led power play there as well. But a 26 goal, 74 point pace on the season, and like he should probably have a little bit better IPP, but he's also got a 13.9% on ice shooting percentage. Hard to see that getting much better. Realistically, the best you're hoping for here is that Zibanejad starts to convert a little bit better and gets a few more goals, but I don't really see him exceeding the 74 point pace rest of season. I think this is kind of just a new low for Zibanejad for the rest of season, unless, you know, something finally clicks all the way here at the back end of the season. I don't think it's the most likely. I don't think you should expect more than what he's been doing so far from Mika Zibanejad. All right, let's talk Drake Batherson here. He's got 4 goals in his last 5 games, skating almost 18 minutes a night, 50th in shots per 60, 66th individual scoring chances score per 60. On-ice numbers not quite as good, but still respectable, 120th in Corsi 4 per 60, 114th in scoring chances 4 per 60. The Ottawa Senators are another one of these teams that has messed around with their power play units, which has created some problems. He was on a unit with Tarasenko, Pinto, and Grieg in the last game. Now, this was all thrown into flux a little bit by Brady Tkachuk being out for that game, so we'll see where things settle. He did play on a line with Giroux and Stützle, which is a nice spot to be at for even strength purposes. Definitely you're going to be okay with that if that continues, but Batherson, I think he kind of is what he is. You know, he's going to skate somewhere in this range, this 17 and a half, 18 minute range. He's going to, 29 goals, 63 point pace on the season. I kind of feel like that's about where he lives. He probably should be shooting a little bit more in the way that he has the last 5 games and not where he's been on the season. He's shown the ability to do that in the past, but he's been pretty efficient, 73% IPP, 15.1% shooting percentage. The 10.2% on ice shooting percentage is where you'd hope to get a boost, and then also from himself just shooting more in general. I do think both of those things are possible, but realistically, I think the ceiling rest of season is a 70-point pace, and the floor is probably not honestly much lower than what it is right now, like a 25 goal 60 point pace. So I think Batherson kind of is what he is, in my opinion. Jackson says, what's up, Nate? Let's get to biz, baby. We've already been getting to biz. That's what we've been doing here for sure. CJ says, Wall or Samsonov? Need to keep one only. What say you, my dude? Yeah, that is a tough situation for sure. Wall versus Samsonov. It's really tough to say because of the recent stretch of play, right? Like, Wall in this game is not performing, I guess, terrifically well. I think the most likely scenario, I've said this before, is that what they want to do is to just alternate back and forth, one game for each player. If one of the two really has a downturn, then you could see a scenario in which one of them kind of does take the net over, as Wall did earlier in the year when Samsonov was just playing like at a below AHL level. But Samsonov does seem to have somewhat rediscovered his game for sure, and has won some games for the Leafs. I think that the most likely scenario is still just a true 50-50 split, and you're just going to be wondering which one to pick up and which one to drop. Moving forward, I guess I would take Samsonov just literally on the basis of the fact that Wall has given up 3 goals on 20 shots here against Boston so far. But honestly, your guess is as good as mine. I don't like to be in the business of projecting goalie performance, and this is why it is very difficult, especially in these scenarios in which it does just look like a true tandem rest of season, unless one of the two just truly falls off a cliff. All right, Kevin Fiala. Is this second half Fiala? 4 goals and 10 points in his last 5 games, absolutely going off. 19 and a half minutes average time on ice. They are using him a ton, especially with the absence of Kempe in the lineup. 14th in shots per 60, 28th in individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 60th in Corsi 4 per 60, 61st in scoring chances 4 per 60. On the season now, pacing for 26 goals, 75 points. I do think that Fiala could have a really strong run to end the season here. Maybe he's a little bit more of the trigger man with Kempe out of the lineup, especially on that power play. That's definitely a strong possibility in my mind, that they just view Fiala as their game breaker now, and they're going to feed him the puck and tell him to be the guy to take the shots. Interesting usage playing with Deneau and Moore in the last game. I'm not hating it. It's definitely working out in the short term. We'll see how it manifests long term. But it's hard to hate the results at the moment. So Kevin Fiala, I don't know if I'm truly going to say he's going to absolutely go off, but definitely the minutes are what's giving me the most excitement about Fiala at the moment. We all know the talent here. Fiala can definitely do this and do this for sustained stretches. But I think you have every reason to be pretty excited about Fiala at the moment, just given the extra time on ice, at least until Kempe is able to return. All right, last one on this list is Mike Matheson. 1 goal, 2 points his last 5 games, still averaging 26 minutes a night. Absolute horse this year for the Canadians. 130th in shots per 60, 130th in shots per 60 and 131st in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. Those are not good numbers for Mike Matheson, and the on-ice numbers are atrocious. 196th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 190th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. That's not been where Matheson has lived on the season, like 36th in shots per 60 on the season. So he's definitely done better on the season. He's got an 11-goal, 58-point pace there. I kind of feel like this should normalize for Mike Matheson, but it's very hard to be confident in the Montreal Canadiens, especially in a scenario in which they're most likely trying to tank a little bit and get a good draft pick here. Overall, it's hard to be truly excited that he could sustain the 11-goal, 58-point pace. But in terms of the player, in terms of the talent, I don't really have any concerns just yet. You know, if he really starts to sustain this terrible level of underlying statistics for a longer period of time, then I would start to have more concern creep in that, you know, you could be dealing with an underlying injury at that point, something along those lines. Maybe he's just sick of playing in Montreal and sick of playing all these minutes all the time. There's just reasons you could give, but at the moment, as of right now, not concerned on Mike Matheson. Maybe we talk again in a week and nothing has changed and I'm a little bit more concerned, but as of right now, I don't have any concerns. Lake Effect, second half Fiala, yeah baby. Definitely good for all the Fiala rosters out there. And we'll probably end on this comment here from Blister Boy. Hey Nate, thoughts on Kyle Connor? Kyle Connor, we can throw into the sheet here and see how his last five games have been. 4 goals, 5 points, 19 and a half minutes time on ice, but the underlying numbers not as hot as they usually are for a guy of Connor's caliber. 199th in shots per 60, 163rd individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 270 in Corsi, 4 per 60, 218 in scoring chances, 4 per 60. So Connor's been able to sustain his production despite not having really good underlying stats. Obviously, on the season, the stats are much better. I typically, with players of this caliber, right, this is, I guess, the point I want to make is a player of this caliber, Kyle Connor's caliber, where he's, you know, locked and loaded, 40 plus goal scorer every year, 75, 80 points feels right in the wheelhouse for Kyle Connor every year. For a player of this caliber, unless I see a really sustained period where things are not trending well, the underlying stats are going bad, he's, you know, maybe moving down the lineup, things like that, other circumstances really coming to bear, I don't ever want to move off of these stud level players like Kyle Connor. So my perception of Kyle Connor has not changed whatsoever, with the underlying stats being lower as of late, despite still continuing to score. I just think Kyle Connor pretty much is who he is. We should just be happy to get his goals, even if the underlying stats aren't good. Probably the underlying stats will come back and the goals will dip off a little bit. You know, there's ebbs and flows to all of this throughout the course of a season. Overall, I'm just very happy to have Kyle Connor on my team if I've got him. All right, I think we made it through just about everything, but I did have one fun question in the Discord server that I wanted to get to here. The question was, hey Nate, I was wondering if you ever dressed up as Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy for Halloween, and if so, did you tell people that you were Groot Nibblink? For those who don't know, my last name is Groot Nibblink. I do say it at the beginning of every podcast, but just in case. I have not done that. I have obviously considered it. It's not lost on me. I do enjoy Marvel movies. I've seen Guardians of the Galaxy. Honestly, it's been more of an impact for my wife, who's a school teacher, and she goes by just Groot, just because Groot Nibblink is a handful, and obviously with kids, it becomes even more of a handful, so she just goes by Groot as the surname when she's teaching. And obviously the kids have loved that. So it's been a bit more of a thing for my wife than it's ever really been for me. But definitely I've had lots of people remark on it over the years. It's definitely been fun to just randomly have that come out in pop culture and have people comment on it. So there you go on that. Well, that's going to be all that we've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value, helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, which is a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for this podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. That's it, folks. Much love.